Hello, this is The Thing About Cars. Thank you for joining us. It is, what is today? Today is January. We shouldn't ever date these things, do we?
It's January 17th, Mickey.
January 17th. God, time is flying.
See, now it's not timeless.
Right. I didn't say which year, Ben.
We have dated.
Oh, yes.
We have dated this. So around the table, we have our usual crew. Dawn, how are you?
I'm fine. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Oh, yeah. We're still saying Happy New Year. Dave, how are you?
I am great. Thank you.
And Ben?
Oh, I'm real well.
And our special guest for today, comedian Love. How's it going?
It's going okay. How you guys doing today? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It's been an interesting year so far, for sure. Let's jump into our Grand Trivia Auto session, because I know we have a lot of other cool things to dig our teeth into today. Our Grand Trivia Auto question is, and you guys are going to kill me because this one's so simple. What do the letters PT stand for in the name of Chrysler's family car, the PT Cruiser? Are they still making the PT Cruiser?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Okay, so no longer being made. So what do the letters PT stand for in that thing? Did they stand for Pacific Time, Page Turner, Pretty Trick, or Personal Transport? Those are our choices. And so we'll answer that question at the end of the show. Dave, let's do our cultural collision segment.
Sure. We're calling today's show True Crime Auto. A few weeks ago, a listener wrote in and challenged us to do an episode about cars and crime. And I was intrigued with the idea, so I sought out the help of the Thing About Cars legal team at the law firm of Screech, Screech, Break and Bang.
Okay.
We're going to hit on two topics today, the most commonly stolen cars in America and cars associated with some of the top crimes in history. So let's start with whether your car is a target for theft. Every year, the National Insurance Crime Bureau, or NICB, compiles a list of the most stolen cars in the U.S., and they just updated it for 2020. On the average, 2,052 cars are stolen every day in the United States. That's basically 85 car thefts per hour. And actually, that's way down from 1991, which was like the peak year for car-related theft in the United States. Now, we call this section cultural collision because we really look at cars in popular culture. And our image of car theft in movies and television and popular culture revolves around these really elaborate heists and high-speed car chases with criminals driving either really high-priced sports cars or sleek black sedans. Per the NICB, the reality is nowhere near that glamorous. Professional car thieves are generally not interested in jacking a Bentley or McLaren. Instead, they target popular and long-standing model lines like the Toyota Corolla or the Honda Civic. And these cars are then dismantled and sold for parts on the black market. Parts for popular models are in high demand due to the multitude of owners with the same models, and they generate more money than the value of the car does in time. And high demand for parts makes these cars really lucrative for markets. I dug more into this and said, okay, well, what cars then are most stolen? In a second, I'm going to run you through the top 10 most stolen cars in America. But there's a couple of lessons that learn from this. Generally speaking, pickup trucks are the car model of choice for many thieves, which surprised me. That was not what I was expecting. Not only do their parts sell for a premium on the black market, but car thieves prefer to use this body style as storage for future crime sprees. And pickup trucks are disproportionately represented in theft rates, as they make up 4 of the 10 most stolen vehicles in America. They're also the most stolen body type in 30 of all 50 states. The second thing that stuck out to me, as I was looking at it, is there's a regional pattern in body style preference among thieves. Whereas the most stolen cars by state are generally sedans, in states along the Northeast and the West Coast, pickups tend to be stolen. Sedans are stolen more in the Northeast and the West Coast, where pickups tend to be stolen more every place else, with a couple of exceptions. Surprisingly, there is a theft market for Chevy Impalas, Toyota Tacomas, and in Wisconsin, the most stolen car is the Dodge Caravan. Huh. Now, I have a good friend slash colleague slash drinking buddy who lives in Wisconsin, in Prescott, Wisconsin. To get to her house, you drive east out of Minneapolis until you reach the year 1972 and you're there. And so I reached out to my friend Kate. Her name is Kate Swanson. I reached out to Kate and asked her, does this make sense to you that Dodge Caravans would be the most stolen car in Wisconsin? And she came back to me immediately. Oh, yes, absolutely. It's a great road trip vehicle. And I'm not kidding. Her second text said the reason it's a good road trip vehicle is you can openly guzzle beer in the back two rows and the cops can't see you. The cooler is easily accessed, tons of cup holders. And if you need to lay down because you've had too much to drink, you can do it between the seats.
So you could haul a lot of cheese in those things, eh?
Wait a minute. It's the most stolen car in Wisconsin because you can drink beer in the back of it and you can go on road trips.
Yeah. Which, you know, if you spend any time in Wisconsin, that's basically what there is to do there.
You know, I would think that maybe a ride share would be a little preferable to actually letting, you know, your car get stolen for that kind of thing.
So the top 10 most stolen cars in the United States in 2020, in reverse order, number 10 was the Jeep Cherokee or Grand Cherokee with just under 10,000 thefts. Number 9 are Dodge pickup full size with 11,000 thefts, GMC pickup full size with 11,700 thefts, the Toyota Corolla with just over 12,000 thefts, the Nissan Altima with over 13,000 thefts, the Toyota Camry with just under 17,000 thefts, the Chevy pickup full size with 31,600 thefts, the Ford pickup full size comes in at number 3 with 36,300 thefts. Number 2 is the Honda Accord with 36,800 and the Honda Civic with 38,400 thefts.
So basically I'm driving around a car that's just begging to be stolen at the moment.
Probably. Yeah, that's interesting. I always thought the Volkswagen Jetta was really high up there.
I think a couple of years ago it was. I think when Volkswagen had to shut down and recall so many of the cars and buy back so many of the cars because of the fuel mileage issue.
Oh, right.
That knocked it out of popularity.
Ah, yes, it did have those. I know someone who bought 2 brand new models, and within 18 months, they had to get them back.
Love, have you ever had a car stolen?
I've never had a car stolen, but I had a car broken into multiple times. And it was not a car that was on this list.
So the other question I want to ask is, have any of us ever actually stolen a car?
I think the statute of limitations has expired, so I can confess to it.
I had a girlfriend steal a car.
Oh my goodness. Wait, so Dave has a story here. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, so when I was in college, my undergrad is from the University of Cincinnati, College of Engineering. And we had a professor whose name I shall omit, we will just call him the Tool, who basically flunked the entire aerospace engineering class on one class, to the point that it was pretty damn close to open warfare in the dean's office between my class and this professor. And he drove one of the old original, like 1960s minis, which, for college sophomores have had more than 3 beers, is perfectly easy to lift and carry all the way to the roof of the engineering college where we left it.
Is that theft or is that just a prank, or is a prank also theft? Is that, is there a legal definition there? Or?
You know what? In Cincinnati, not so much.
Yeah.
Too funny. So you had a girlfriend steal a car, love?
Yes. A rental car. I call myself breaking up with her in a public space to make it easy because I knew she was a hothead. And so she was like, it's okay, I'll be all right. So then she gets up, she storms off. I'm like, oh, that was, at least it was just that. But I didn't realize when she stormed off, she had the keys to the rental car with her until I'm looking outside the window of the restaurant and I see the car pull off. It's like, yeah, this is, that's not good. So I run out the restaurant trying to chase the car down. The only thing that I think that saved it is she had drove to the restaurant. So of course her car was still there, so she couldn't go too far. And I think that's the only thing saved it. But yeah, it was, yeah, it was a, not a happy moment. That's when I learned this, the recognize the signs of the crazy girlfriend.
Yeah, there's there, that's a subject for another podcast, I'm sure.
Ooh. I'll take that one. Crazy yeah. girlfriend, the car stories.
Okay, exactly.
I feel well qualified to moderate that.
Yeah. Dave, what else you got?
I think the other thing that as I was digging through this, I was like, okay, and you know, question came across my mind. Were there favorite cars for specific criminals, or you know, are there popular, you know, cars among great criminals or great crimes? And so in digging around researching this, I found a list on complex.com of the 15 most infamous cars in crime history. I'm not going to read you all 15, but I do think there are five or six.
This is real crime, not TV crime.
This is real crime. This is real crime.
Okay.
You know, because I am, you know, I'm a marketer at heart. Maybe there's a trend here to be learned. You know, if for example, if the Lotus is the preferred car of master criminals everywhere, maybe there's something, you know, we can learn and market to them about that.
It's why Ben has one, actually.
Oh yeah.
So, interestingly, you know, so when we think about, you know, different, criminals. Now, there are great crimes that we know the connection of the vehicle and the crime, you know, like the, you know, Timothy McVeigh and the Ryder truck, or O.J. Simpson and the
Bronco.
But there were some more interesting ones from history in here that I thought I would touch on. Like, for example, did you know that the Nazi Gestapo preferred the 1934 Citroën Traction Avant? And it was a lot easier to figure out. It would be a lot easier to figure out who to shoot if people would just drive different cars. And apparently Hitler's Gestapo and the French mafia didn't get the memo because they both rolled in traction avants in occupied France.
Okay. Interesting.
The car was noteworthy for its beauty. It had legendary performance. Reports from the era indicated that it handled far better than anything else in the market, thanks to its self-supporting body and independent suspension and early hydraulic brakes.
I was going to say, they had to invade in style.
Absolutely. And this continued on all through occupation, and no one was ever sure if they were actually dealing with you know, the Gestapo or the mafia.
Hmm.
Another one that jumped out at me, and you know, so in 1963, we've all heard the story of the Great Train Robbery and the movie that went after it, where, you know, they stole $7 million in cash from a train, and the gang who robbed the trains all got away in Land Rovers, except for the mastermind criminal. The guy who masterminded the great train robbery was named Bruce Reynolds, and his preferred escape vehicle was the 1963 Ford Lotus Cortina.
Oh.
So I'm just, you know, imagine you've just stolen $7 million, and all I could equate it to looking at this car in the United States would be, yeah, you guys all escape in the Rolls Royces. I'm going to take this 72 Ford Tercel.
Right.
Hey, then you won't be so noticeable. I mean, if you think about it.
Well, the Cortina was a great choice for him because it would outrun and outhandle any of the police cars. It was essentially a small Ford sedan with a Lotus engine in it.
Uh-huh.
And Colin Chapman's handling tweaks in the suspension.
And he had all of that, and he still got caught.
He still got caught.
I think the money was weighing him down.
Probably.
Yeah.
Stole so too much and became dead weight in his car. That's not good.
Yeah. So, you know, and you know, so we're talking about criminals, but, you know, there's also, there's a car assassinations have taken place in cars. And, you know, while John F. Kennedy's assassination is probably the most famous car to take place in an automobile, you can't also overlook the 1911 Rothstift double Phaeton that Archduke Franz Ferdinand was driving.
Oh, well, in the start of World War.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and mm-hmm. yeah, so you're right. World War One was started with Franz Ferdinand's assassination. What you probably don't know was that Gavrilo Princip, who killed him, was not, the gunman who killed him was not the first person to try to kill him that day. That actually a grenade had been hurled at the car earlier in the day, but bounced under another car in the motorcade. And after the first attempt, Ferdinand famously shouted, "So you welcome your guests with bombs," and then continued on the route in the same path. You know, I would think after somebody had blown up a car in the motorcade, maybe you might have turned, driven left.
A security change must have taken place. But man, they really wanted him dead.
They really wanted him dead.
Yeah.
Oh, that was also an era when, you know, things were viewed a little bit differently. It was unmanly to walk away from danger.
That's true. That is true.
Well, I would not have been the most manly person in the world, because somebody tries to kill you, nothing says go home like a grenade.
Right?
Thank you, Love. You and I are appropriately in touch with our masculinity. Yes. I don't need to put anything to anyone.
Oh, was that a grenade?
See ya.
Time to go.
Yeah. Exit stage left.
Too funny.
I'll touch on one other, actually two other great criminals. Al Capone preferred a 1928 Cadillac sedan. You know, he took this, you know, he was one tough customer, really knew how to take necessary precautions, unlike Franz Ferdinand. Capone had inch-thick bulletproof glass and 3,000 pounds of steel armor plating installed in this car in order to protect him as he was driving through Chicago.
Well, I think the Cadillac is a perfect platform for that. Huge engine, running boards so that your henchmen can hang on to the side of the car and shield you. But if he armored that thing, good grief.
Yeah. And actually, so when the police finally caught up with Capone, the car was seized by the government and actually ended up being used by FDR following the bombing of Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
It was last seen in August of 2010 when Texas millionaire John M. Quinn attempted to sell the car only to keep the vehicle after no one met his asking price. But doesn't end there. A second identical vehicle surfaced at the British auction in 2006 and has been verified as authentic. So it's rumored there is a third Capone Cadillac parked in a long forgotten Chicago basement or buried underneath a buried building.
Did Geraldo Rivera find that one?
This is real dynamite, folks.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Thank so that. You, well, I got one last one that got me thinking then, okay, what did Adolf Hitler drive? Well, first of all, Adolf Hitler did not drive. He couldn't drive. He liked being driven around a lot, and he liked to be driven around.
He must have been from New York.
Yeah. You know, he'd had a Mercedes 770K, a 1935 Mercedes 770K limousine. And he liked the car because it created an imposing and commanding presence. But if the vehicle wasn't already imposing enough, Hitler had each of his 770Ks outfitted with armor plating until each car weighed 5 tons. The vehicle was also outfitted with a mineproof floor and 4 centimeter thick bulletproof glass thwart would-be assassins. Again, somebody who could learn a lesson, unlike Franz Ferdinand. The thing is
and it makes you think that, you know, he knew he was not doing the right thing. If you've got that much armor surrounding you, you gotta know that you're not a popular guy.
You would like to think so, yet amazingly, the number of politicians who seem to miss that memo.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So all of
Do we need to mention the Pope Mobile?
last I checked, the Pope Mobile has not been associated with any actual crimes.
Yeah.
The funny thing with Hitler's Mercedes is the Pope Mobile gets better mileage because he had all of this armor and glass installed on the car. It became an epic gas guzzler. Hitler's cars could only get 3 miles to the gallon.
Oh, God.
And there is a Russian collector, Dmitry Lomakov, who owns 6 of Hitler's limousines. And Russians view buying them as a symbol of the Russian victory. He even said that, you know, there's a quote of him: "For Russians, the Second War isn't a historical event. For us, it happened yesterday." And buying a Nazi car is like sticking one finger up to him.
Man, villains' cars. If we have any listeners out there who know anything else about cars used in famous getaways or infamy of any kind, please drop us a line. Find us on Facebook and let us know what you know. We'd like to hear from you. Anything else, Dave?
You know what? I think that sufficiently covers, my admission of involvement in crime went a direction I wasn't expecting to take the segment. I think I'm just going to take the fifth for the next few minutes.
Very cool. Let's transition to Love, comedian. I've watched your YouTube clips that I found online. You are a very funny man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I try my darndest.
So I have to ask, and we can edit this out if necessary. Please tell me about your name.
It may seem to be complicated and super whatever, but it's super. My last name is Lavender. That's where the lab comes from. It is, and then the love is just because people love me. It's just
very cool.
It's not a complicated name at all.
Right.
Awesome.
And you were introduced to us by a mutual friend who indicated that you were going on a rather unique comedy tour around the country. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
All right. So being a comedian, once COVID hit, most comedy clubs and all event venues shut down. So it left a lot of us entertainers just sitting at the house. So after sitting at the house for so long, I was like, yo, how can I get out and still, you know, socially distance, still be, you know, conscious of, you know, COVID and everything that's going on. So I came up with the idea of this thing called the Power Up Tour, because I own a Tesla. So in the Power Up Tour, I would drive across country in my Tesla, stopping at superchargers in various cities, and I would perform outside at the Tesla supercharger. So the show would be outside, which is a great thing. It's already socially distanced because you're in your car. So I thought it would be a great idea. So I drove from Atlanta to California and back in a loop. And, you know, and I hit various cities and I would stop and I would record. And it was definitely a fun experience without a doubt.
Very cool.
Wow. Yeah. Where did you stay along the way?
I stayed at various hotels. I planned it out in advance. First city was New Orleans. Then it was Houston. Then El Paso, Tucson, Phoenix. And I'm going through the route in my head. Phoenix, L.A., Palo Alto, which is where Tesla's headquarters is. And then Palo Alto started the route back. Coming back, it was New Mexico, Oklahoma City, Dallas, and Birmingham, Atlanta.
So you basically did I-10 and I-20?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And that's how did it, very cool.
And Tesla sanctioned all this, right? You were in contact with them and they said, yeah, go for it.
So what happened was a manager at a Tesla dealership, he thought it was a great idea. He was like, yo, if you do this and we get the footage, this is something I think I can run up the chain. So I was like, okay, cool. So halfway through the tour, Tesla found out about it. The corporate Tesla found out about it. And they put the kiboshes on it because, well, not even halfway, more than halfway, because I only had two more cities left. So their thing was they liked the idea, but they was like, he wasn't authorized to approve that and okay that. So it kind of ended with a whimper as opposed to a bang.
Oh,
man. I'm so, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, because I thought it would be a great idea because the whole concept was it was free. It was free laughs. And my thing was, you know, during COVID, what more do we need than just to laugh and have a good time? You know what I'm saying? And then to do it and it be free. And it was just, you know, I was combining, you know, the car that I love with, you know, I love traveling with what I love, what I do for a living. So it was the best of all worlds to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of disappointed that they had to put the brakes on it. Any idea why?
They never got back to us and my agent or anything on it. They never gave. So what I know happened is a manager at a mall in Oklahoma City was not happy about it and not knowing anything about it. So she called Tesla to complain.
I bet her name was Karen.
Probably so. And so she called Tesla to complain. And then Tesla went and found me on the internet and reached out to my agents and they emailed a cease and desist request. Without a doubt.
So. Yeah,
man. Well, did you at least have a couple of cool gigs before all of that happened? Was it?
I actually got to every city. The last two cities were Dallas and Birmingham. So I got through all of the cities until in Oklahoma City. That was like middleways of the show when she came out and put the squash to it. So the only two cities I didn't do were Birmingham and Dallas. But outside of that, I got every other city in. I met a lot of good people. Did a lot of good shows. So it was a great drive. It was fun. I actually had a good time. I just wished, again, like you said, Tesla would have gotten on board with it. But it was a great time. It was a great drive. Of course, you know, and the Southwest is a beautiful area of our country.
Oh, so yeah.
I love driving through the Southwest.
Yeah.
What time of year were you on this trip?
The late fall. So it still was warm enough. It wasn't cold. Still was warm enough to where, you know, stopping in places like Mexico, in New Mexico and Oklahoma, still was warm enough to be outside. It was a perfect time, actually.
Yeah, man. Well, I think it's a great concept. I hope you get to attempt something like that again. How did you end up with the Tesla?
I'm a gadget junkie. And so I have a plethora of gadgets here at my house. And so the Tesla was the ultimate gadget for me. And so that's how I ended up with the Tesla. It was the ultimate gadget. And I'm a little environmentally conscious also. So I love the idea of not having to go to the gas station anymore.
Yeah. What? Now that it's so cute. I'm curious because I know a lot of friends with Teslas. What model do you have? And you had to absolutely map this out because you had to hit electric charging stations when you started to run out. So this wasn't going to be like, oh, I'm going to go off road here.
Yeah. So that's one of those myths. And that's another thing I want to show too with the Tesla is a lot of things that about Tesla that people don't know. There's roughly a supercharger, roughly 150 miles in between every major city. So it was not hard to drive cross country at all. And even if you went off road, let me answer the first part. I have a Model 3 dual motor. So that was the easy part. The charging part was actually the easiest part of it because there was always a charger within driving distance, no matter what. It's just the thing about it though, about when you have to charge, it adds driving time. Because you have to spend time charging. And for my car, if I'm almost dead, it takes roughly 35 to 40 minutes, but the average charge time is roughly 30 minutes. If I'm really low, not empty, but really low, roughly 30 minutes. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But you have to, like you said, you have to time that out, because normally I think when you, a gas powered vehicle, probably 5 minutes.
Yeah. But the car does all of that for you. So you actually don't have to map it out. If you put in where you want to go, the car will map out the charging stations. It'll map out the charging times. It does all of that.
That's very cool.
Yeah,
that is really cool. Now I want a Tesla more than ever. Well, it's
come
funny
on to the family. We got plenty of room.
It's funny to hear you characterize the Tesla as a gadget. I've never heard that characterization before. I think that's a good way to look at it.
A really big, expensive gadget, but a gadget.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because at the end, it's really just, it's a big computer. When you get in it once you're in it and you drive it, it's really just it's a big computer that happens to have four wheels attached to it.
Very cool. What would you do differently next time if you had to do it again?
It took me 2 weeks to do it. I would expand it to 3 weeks, and I would spend more time in the cities and exploring the cities that I stopped to do the shows in. And I would add that to my footage that I got and the experience and just, and more interaction with the people of that city and the things that were in that city. That's the only thing I would change. Outside of that.
Yeah.
I loved everything. And I would make sure I would guarantee that Tesla was on board. But outside of that,
there is that. Yeah. Yeah. No, that is very cool. I hope you get to do that. And, you know, we've had similar ideas about things we could do with the thing about cars, and doing road trips has been on our radar from time to time. So maybe we should sit down and compare notes someday maybe, I don't know if there's a way to help each other out or not, but it would be cool to find out.
Yeah. If you guys did it, I guarantee you would love that. The one thing I love too is getting at those charging stations and starting to set up, and people saw me setting up, and then they would start to ask questions. And then I told them what I was doing. They would be all on board. They had questions. I took pictures. They had questions about the car. People who didn't own Teslas had questions. So it was a great thing to get out and just meet people face to face. And that was fun. And as a stand-up comic, one of the things I love the most of all about what I do is dealing with the crowd, talking to the crowd, interacting with people, you know, and that's one of the things I got back. And that was part of the point of doing the whole thing, is getting back in touch with the people who enjoy what I do for a living.
Yeah.
You know, actually, Mickey, if we're going to do that, we probably should start keeping a list of all of the car brands that we've insulted on this show, just so we know what dealerships we're not going to be welcome in. You know, after the November show where Becca went off on Camaros for 25 minutes, I think Chevy's just right out.
I don't know. You know, I would like to walk onto a Chevy dealership and say, hey, look, here's the shot at redemption. Can we do this together? And,
oh, good. The thing about Cars Shakedown series.
We hate you until we love you. That's right. Well, thank you very much. This has been a very cool story. I hope you can join us here at the microphone again sometime.
Oh, I thank you guys for having me. I was excited about doing it, without a doubt.
Yeah, I'm glad we could finally get it done after playing email tag and just generally flubbing up the schedule on my end. So I apologize about my delays, but I'm glad we could finally do it.
Hey, I own it too. I'm not the greatest at emails either. You know, I'm old, so you know, I don't hang by the email like a lot of people do. Like, and I should. And that's wrong on my behalf in 2021. But yeah, it's on me too.
Yeah, it is what it is. Thank you, love. And if you ever, you know, run across any cool car material and need to test audience, just give us a buzz.
I will.
All right, Ben. Ben's going to take a moment. Ben, take
it. Point of process. You have questions for Lav that you have not asked him.
You are quite right, Dave. Thank you.
You can't let Lav leave without the Lav.
I can't leave. Yeah, that's right. And I'm looking at Ben, who's got all this anticipation all over his face.
Oh well, I was just going to say, I hope he sticks around for the trivia at the end.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, love. Three questions that we ask every guest, or four questions rather.
Okay.
So what is your dream car?
So it was a Tesla, but Tesla's coming out with this new model called the Plaid. So that's my new dream car.
Ah, interesting. I don't think I'm familiar with this yet. I have to do some research.
Me either.
Yeah. Goes Tesla to zero to 60 in under 2 seconds.
That's crazy.
Yes. Wow.
I wonder if that's a nod to the movie Spaceballs.
Yes, it is. That's it is because the ultimate speed in the Tesla right now is called the ludicrous speed. And what's faster than ludicrous? Plaid. So that's exactly where it comes from.
I'm looking this up. It's a variant on the Model S.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Okay.
It is.
In fact, the first article on it I see, the headline says Lord Helmut approves.
That's very cool. All right, loves. Question number two. Where is your next road trip going to be?
Omaha, Nebraska next weekend. I will be at this club called the Funny Bone at Omaha, Nebraska next weekend.
Okay. Very cool. So live performances. What is that? I think
Yes, live performances. That is my next out-of-town gig in Oklahoma. In Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay.
Are you driving?
No, I'm going to fly to Omaha. I've had my feel. So, yeah.
All right, cool. Question number three. What's the most fascinating thing you've seen in someone's house or garage?
I had a friend who played NFL football. And the first time I went to, well, an acquaintance, let me not call him a friend. And the first time I went to his house, he had the garage where you drive in and then it lowered one car down and then the other car parked on top of it. That was the coolest thing I ever seen in my life.
And it's
lifters, like they have in New York. Yeah, the lifters.
Yes. But to have that in your garage, that was so sexy to me.
Was so sexy. I've seen a loft in the Castleberry Hill area where the guy had four of those and he had eight BMWs parked there. And they were all like recent models. None of them were antique collectors or anything like that, but he would simply go to the dealership and say, yeah, give me these eight this year. And then, you know, next year he would probably go doing the same thing again. It's just
in his loft. Isn't that a little bit like living in a CarMax vending machine?
Carvana.
Carvana. That's right. Sorry. The Carvana vending machine.
I'm not sure I would object. If the cars that I want are in there, I wouldn't object to that at all.
Yeah, it's like playing roulette 7 days a week. What car am I going to drive?
Right. Well, our last question for you today is, what's the most embarrassing thing you've ever worn?
I'm also an improv artist. And one time doing an improv skit, I had on a nice little cute halter top. Yeah, I'm not really proud to tell that story. And I don't appreciate you making me tell it.
I'm sorry, man.
yeah. Nice little halter top, Jimmy. It was a red. I remember like it was yesterday, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it was a red halter top.
Wow.
As long as it's a memory and not a flashback, that's yeah.
It's tragedy, is what it is. It's tragedy.
Improv tragedy. There's a market for that somewhere, I'm sure.
You know, we have a comment.
Yes,
for that.
And there's no knock on anybody, but I'm just not sexy in a halter top by any stretch of imagination. That's all. I'm not sexy that way.
The gay men of Atlanta have a description of that. It's known as booger drag.
And I may fall into that category because I was not sexy at all.
Yeah, there's a fine line between drag and just a mess in a dress.
I have never heard this term before. That's hilarious. Well, thank you for being our guest, love.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and here's where I turn the table over to Ben. Ben is going to take a moment. Take it away, Ben.
Yeah, today I would like to take a moment to talk about Oldsmobile.
Okay.
And my father drove? Saying, "Well,
no, I'm just kidding."
Could be. Yeah. No, if you're wondering why, though, this past week on one of my business trips, I was down in southern Mississippi and a little bit of northern Mississippi, too. And in 3 days on the road, I saw a surprising number of Oldsmobiles of many different ages and kind of stuck out in my mind. Why so many? I don't know. I'll probably never be able to answer that. But it got me thinking about them because this is a brand that's no longer with us. And so I start reading about it a little bit, and I always knew a little bit of the background, but it's kind of an interesting company in some ways because, first of all, the name, Ransom Eli Olds was the founder, And he started this company in 1897. And one thing that is largely forgotten about the early Oldsmobile is that they actually beat Ford to mass production. Yeah, Oldsmobile was the first, you know, assembly line or mass produced car.
Why does Ford get credit for that?
Better marketing.
Yeah, that, well, and something that happens with a lot of things, I think, is that Henry Ford may not have invented it, but he sort of perfected the process. You know, this is what happens with a lot of things. Somebody else may invent it, but whoever perfects it, gets the credit. Same thing with aviation. We always give the Wright brothers the credit with inventing airplanes, but they really didn't. They merely kind of standardized the format and made it, you know, sort of repeatable and reliable. But anyway, yeah, Ransom Olds was from Lansing, Michigan. He starts this company. He makes a few cars. 1897, he started this company. So it was the oldest, you know, American brand for quite a long time. It was the fifth oldest car maker in the world by the time it ceased operations. But Olds himself didn't stick around that long. He left in 1904. I believe there was a little bit of a board shakeup there or something. And he went on to found another company, the REO company, which wound up making a lot of trucks. In fact, the band REO Speedwagon get their name from one of those products. But General Motors acquired Oldsmobile in 1908. So, you know, only 11 years in, became a subsidiary of somebody else, but the brand stuck around until 2004. And this is where my memory got a little jogged, because I thought Olds was killed, you know, during the shakeup of the 2008 recession when they killed off Pontiac and Hummer. But no, the plug was pulled back in 2004. And it's kind of a shame, because some of the products at the time were, you know, sort of promising. The Alero was not a bad car. But apparently not a very durable one, because you don't see very many of them today, fewer and fewer of them. But, this is a company that was known for many years for technological innovation and for doing some, you know, cool things in the market too. Yeah. They had the 88s, the Rocket 88 in the 50s was, you know, memorialized in song. It's a famous car. And, the Delta 88 later on, not so much, but, they did cool things. They had Cutlasses, they had 442s. You know, there really were some cool Oldsmobiles over the years.
The 98 was a really cool one.
That too, yeah. It's really kind of a shame they went out with a whimper. But
I have a friend who had a Delta 88 that he used to call the Boogiemobile. And I missed that car. That was a pretty cool car.
Yeah, my driver ed car in high school was a Cutlass. This will date me a little bit here, but the Oldsmobile dealer supplied all the driver ed cars to my high school, you know, brand new ones every year. Of course, they were just, you know, I don't know if they're even leased. I think they may have just been letting them use them as long as their big magnetic, you know, ad could be on the door. But I did my driver ed in a brand new 84 Cutlass Supreme, metallic burgundy with the vinyl top and the wire hubcaps, and this thing was loaded. It was pretty sweet.
Cool.
The only thing they did was stick the dealer's ad on the door, and of course they screwed that little extra brake pedal down on the passenger side, which I remember my teacher would, you know, he would take his shoes off and he would fondle that pedal lovingly with his socked foot.
Yeah,
that's kind of a disturbing mental image.
I can't get that out of my head.
That's not what I would have expected you to say, Ben. That's kind of...
Well, you know, and as a student, it makes you a little nervous, because you're driving along and he's just stroking that brake pedal, you know. It really does things for your confidence as a driving student.
Yeah, eyes on the road, Benjamin.
When's he going to hit that thing? No, he never did, though. Not even when anybody else was driving. I don't recall him ever actually using that pedal, much to our credit, somehow. Not even when the fight over the radio station broke out. I remember this is while I was driving. Remember, it's 1984. And I'll Wait by Van Halen comes on the radio. First time I heard it. And somebody in the back seat's like, whoa, is that the new Van Halen? And I think that I care if it's a teacher wanted to change the station. And one of the kids in the back seat is now, you know, crawling over the seat to fight with him for the radio dial. And I'm just being pushed further and further toward the door as this is happening and trying to keep the car going straight. And so, yeah, great early memory of an Oldsmobile right there.
I'm already having bad dreams, Ben. I don't need to think about the foot thing. Can I have more bad dreams. Oh,
Coach Pounds, if you're listening, I don't mean to embarrass you. Yeah, well, the sports coaches taught driver ed at my school.
That's cool. So what happened in the end? Was it just mismanagement? Was it GM simply saying they had to cut off all these extraneous limbs just to survive? What happened?
I'm still not completely clear on that. I think our economy was doing okay in the early 2000s, but maybe not spectacular. It hadn't quite ramped up to where it was, you know, running off the rails in 2007. But I know GM had a whole lot of brands at that time.
They did.
Yeah, I mean, just in the cars alone, there were five, and Oldsmobile slotted in right in the dead center of them. You know, Chevy was at the bottom, then Pontiac, then Oldsmobile, then Buick, and then Cadillac. And Oldsmobile was a little nicer, so I think the lines between them and Buick were always a little blurry. And in fact, if you go back far enough, you'll hear, you know, probably about mid-century generation men referring to Oldsmobuicks.
Well, don't forget at this time also, yeah, you're right, they had five main brands, but they're also, you know, playing with the Saturn brand. They had
that too.
Yeah, they had so many brands in so many crossover markets. And, you know, when you read marketing studies of it, they didn't really steal, they cannibalized their own markets and their own brands. They weren't stealing business from Ford or Toyota or you know, any of the European manufacturers. They were just stealing business from their own brands.
Yeah, and it's especially ridiculous when you consider, you know, like in the 70s and 80s, when the only difference between a Chevy, an Olds, a Pontiac, and a Buick was, you know, a little bit of interior and exterior trim, you know, which grill and bumper and tail lights were on the thing.
Right.
Yep.
But it would have been, if they had kept it around, it might have become even worse, you know, once the truck brands started getting into the SUV thing, which hadn't quite taken off in 04, you know, like it has now. You know, now then they'd be additionally competing with GMC.
Right.
Which I also wonder why they kept around, since GMC and Chevy trucks have always been kind of same thing, different grill. You know?
That's the thing, right? It's like, you know, if Chevy had to choose, I mean, I'm sure it all just boiled down to some number crunching in the end, but if you had to eliminate something, why not keep various, you know, style elements in place and just get rid of the things that are just out and out duplicates?
But an interesting thing, too, to get back to the early history, is that the company was not originally called Oldsmobile. It was just called Olds. Yeah. And the mobile came from popular culture, and the company just eventually picked it up. I believe it was a country song still in the 1900s that uses the Oldsmobile as a name.
Come away for the first with time me, in anything Lucille, published. In my merry Oldsmobile.
There you go.
Hey, Jeff, my friend Jeff, if you're listening to this, please write and or tell me what happened to the Boogie Mobile. I need to know. So, yeah. So, thanks, Ben. What else you got?
Oh, that's about it for that. Okay. If you want to see kind of the origin of it all, look up the curved dash Oldsmobile, which was not its official model name, but it's what everybody knows them as. This is a car built in. This is like their first mass produced, you know, product, and you know it's about the size of a coffee table. It's got no roof. It's got two seats, little bicycle wheels, but it is probably the most collectible car of that era because it's one of the few that they made several of and that many of them survive.
All right, curved dash, I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember, I think my grandfather actually won an Oldsmobile, like in a lottery type drawing. I've been texting my mother and saying, didn't grandpa win an Oldsmobile? Kind of an interesting story.
Yeah, so next time you all see an Oldsmobile driving around out there, just take a moment to remember them.
Yep. Good old Oldsmobile. All right. Thank you, Ben. I've got one worst car story from my friend Amy. Amy says that her worst car was a 1981 Chrysler New Yorker.
The worst car I ever owned was a 1981 Chrysler New Yorker. I was driving it in about 1992 or so. The interior ceiling liner had started coming unstuck, so my mom had just stapled it back up with like your average home staple gun in spots, so it kind of had a quilted, billowy, pillowing look to it. It had a short in the speakers so that when you went over a bump, half the speakers would go out. So then you'd have to turn the radio way up to hear it. Then the next bump, the speakers would reconnect, bow, you'd get blasted with noise. The gas gauge worked fine from full to half, but the moment that gas gauge went a hair past half, it dropped immediately to empty.
Nice.
So then you'd set the trip odometer and you knew you had exactly 100 miles or so before you were going to be on empty. The turn signal required a hard karate chop to signal left.
Ooh.
Wow. Okay. Watch out.
But the best thing about this car, or best worst thing about this car, was its rather capricious tendency to just flat out die in the middle of left turns, requiring a quick flip from drive to park with, you know, the gear shift chain, the gear lever was on the steering wheel column. So you had to put it from drive to park, crank the engine to life again, and pray the whole time that you weren't going to get hit by another car. So that was the worst car I ever owned, was the 1981 Chrysler New Yorker, which was white with crimson interior.
Oh my.
Right. That was a 1991 Chrysler New Yorker, which if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, you said 81 Chrysler New Yorker.
81.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Which if I'm not mistaken is an absolute boat of a car.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank
back
you.
In the room.
Thank you, Amy, for that worst car story. That's pretty funny. And if any listeners have any worst car stories, and you know what, I'm going to start soliciting for best car stories too. I think we should balance it out a little bit.
Or most amusing.
Right. Most amusing. So let's see if you've got a worst car story, a best car story, a funny car story, or a crime car story, you should write to us.
Yes, we will later add in the seven deadly sins. Do you have a gluttony car story?
I'll give some advice to would-be criminals. Don't use an old British car as your getaway car, because they'll be able to follow the oil spots and find you.
Oh,
that's fantastic. That's right on. I mean, I told you guys my favorite British car joke, right?
Probably.
I know I've done it on the show a million times, but I don't know if Don or Dan
has heard it.
No, I have not.
So why don't the British make computers?
Why, Mickey?
They can't figure out how to give one an oil leak.
Oh my.
Don's like, I don't know if I want to be on this show anymore.
No, I'm just recalling that anytime someone has said to me, hey, you know, Jaguars a really great car, and I'm like, yeah, if you can have two, one that's always in the shop and the other one in your driveway with an oil spot.
Right. Too funny. All right, shall we wrap up the show with our grand trivia auto question?
Let's do it.
All right, the question was, what do the letters PT stand for in the name of Chrysler's family car, the now discontinued PT Cruiser? Does it stand for personal transport, pretty trick, page turner, or Pacific time? Ben, what do you think?
I'm going to go with personal transport.
Don?
I have to, because my parents owned a PT Cruiser.
Yeah, see, Dave?
I have been trying for the entire show to try to make the initials PT into some joke about ZZ Top wannabe, and I have failed miserably. So in absence of having a joke, we're just going to go with personal transport.
See, I knew this one was too easy, because that is correct. PT stands for personal transport. But
well, some of those other ones are cool, though.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The other ones are great.
And it wasn't a bad car either. I used to joke about it mostly because of its looks for a long time. I'm still not fond of its appearance. But that said, I had one as a rental car on an early business trip, and the thing really impressed me for two reasons. One, because it could haul a lot of stuff. You know, not only was that kind of wagon back end on it pretty big, but there was a big compartment underneath the rear seat you could slide things into.
Yeah.
Skis or a golf bag or whatever. There was no enclosed structure under the rear seat. And two, because I'm obnoxiously tall, this car had lots of headroom, good legroom, and the right lumbar support. I mean, I drove this thing for a week from Dallas down to basically the Mexican border and back. I put 1,500 miles on it that week, and wow. I was comfortable the whole way.
That's amazing, Ben, because I hated that car. I could not wait till my parents got rid of that car. Or whenever my folks say, hey, would you drive us somewhere? I'm like, not in that car.
they've still got an interesting little fan following. And you know, some people made some custom bits for them that are kind of interesting.
It's, yeah, you know, it's a cute, ugly car. It's, right. You know, it's like one of those, fugly cars.
Well, when they made when they made it into a two-door convertible, my nephew still drives one, and it was a statement car. You're right; they were comfortable to drive. But to Don's point, you know, the statement that you were making entirely depended on, you know, what demographic age group you fell into.
Right.
Yeah. They also had like, they made it into a Woody. They had like wooden panels on it. I mean, it was almost like a Lego car. It was just, you could like change things out and do, I just didn't like to drive it. I didn't like it at all.
What I thought was pretty interesting too, was that at one point Chevrolet tried to compete with it with a car they called the HHR.
Yes.
Which I don't think was any better looking.
No, actually it was more,
maybe a little worse looking.
It was worse looking. It was more industrial looking than the little PT Cruiser.
Funny you mentioned that, because the HHR did have a panel delivery version available for commercial purposes, where the rear doors on each side had no handles and no windows. They didn't even open. They were just an insert put in place of the door. And, you know, just the only glass on the side was the driver window.
Yeah, I think my husband for a while was salivating over the, I think it was called SSR. It was kind of a hybrid truck.
Yeah.
It was
a little hardtop convertible pickup with retro styling, and it had, I believe, a Corvette engine in it.
Yes, yes. He wanted one of those for a decade. And
sold horribly.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. Because what purpose? I mean, except for just having fun, what was the purpose of so much of that?
Yeah, neat idea, but the public just couldn't really wrap their heads around it.
Especially not with that engine. Lot of engine for that car.
You guys, you going to tackle one more car question before we really wrap up here?
Sure.
Let's have it.
Completely impromptu question here, but something I've often wondered is, why are new vehicle dealerships based on brands rather than vehicle types? And someone has submitted this question, and I can't remember who, but I've often thought this. Why isn't there a truck store, for instance, that carries all of the different brands of trucks or minivans or convertibles or whatever? So I know, what do you guys think? Why is that?
Well, I think it has to do with the franchise system. You know, you're franchised to Buick or Cadillac or Volkswagen or, you know, whatever. If you were to carry all the trucks, you'd have to have a franchise with everybody who makes a truck. And it may not even fly with the legal departments of some of those brands, because they might not want you to be selling the competition.
But would you need a franchise agreement or just a sales agreement?
I'm pretty sure it's actual franchise, because you've got to have all the signage, and a lot of the brands require your showroom to look a certain way, and, you know, things like that. You've got to have the service and sales both supported properly.
And dealers are a strong
lobby. Right. I believe it's totally I believe it's totally franchising, but I have seen used car lots with one type of vehicle.
Yes. That's the exception. In fact, there's a place here in Atlanta that is nothing but Corvettes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've seen all trucks. I've seen all SUVs. A lot of people, I think that's really cool, because then they go in and they're like, do I want a Chevy? Do I want a Ford? Do I want a Dodge? Do I want a BMW?
This particular model.
Yeah. I think that's cool.
Yeah. There should be a shopping mall for cars. There should be a gigantic drive-in shopping mall for car dealerships.
It's 138 over there by Union City.
It's true.
It's amazing. I drove that way the other day, and I was shocked at mile after mile, every make, model, brand of car. I don't even think there was one. The only one that wasn't there was Mercedes, because they're up the road about two more exits.
To a lesser extent, State Highway 20 or Buford Drive up where I live. Up around the mall, just almost every brand is up there.
Union City and that area up there have both passed what's known as the car dealership event horizon. It is no longer economical for those cities to do anything but sell cars.
But to Mickey's point, you know, that makes it a lot easier than driving and driving. Even though you like to drive, you could just say, okay, I was just over here and I was just over there, and, you know, you can kind of haggle back and forth without having to drive.
So So that's it for this episode of The Thing About Cars. Thank you, as always, for joining us for the ride. If you have a moment, we would really appreciate your input via our Facebook page. We like it even more when you leave us a rating via Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or wherever you catch our show. Those ratings make us more visible to others. And what am I forgetting, you guys? Anything else?
Thanks to comedian Lav Love. And if you want to if you want to check out Lav, visit his website at comedianlavlove.com.
Awesome. Yes. Thank you, Dave. And I guess that should do it. In the meantime, we hope you and yours are staying warm and safe out there. Be careful. We'll see you with another episode in about a week. Take it easy.
Bye, all.
See ya.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.